Hello, everybody. Welcome to the. Is this the third episode of BiHards, Brian?
Yeah, this is the third episode of BiHards and the
Oh.
first one without the Sean at the helm. So I feel like, the two teenagers who were sneaking out of the house.
Well, we definitely broke into Dad's liquor cabinet for this one. That's all I gotta say.
I got some of Dad's beer, that's for sure. So
No, welcome to BiHards, guys. And this is episode three. Sean sadly had a doubleheader tonight, so he could not attend. So we're trying our best to hobble this together, and hopefully it sounds good. You'll have to let us know and let us know how terrible everything was. We actually have a lot to talk about this week for just a two-person episode. Obviously, the big one, pre-release. I mean, we'll go deep into that one. And then a couple of big announcements, and they have a lot of implications moving forward with standard and even modern and other formats. So I think it's all going to be a really good show. Brian, I know we typically do what are you drinking on tryhards, but let's since this is BiHards, what are you enjoying tonight?
I am enjoying a little bit of what's left of the spotted cow from Wisconsin that my wife got quite a
Oh.
few months ago now. And so due to pre-show extensions, let's say, Hurley, I think I'm already on number two. So yeah, who knows how many I'll have before the end of the BiHards episode. What is making the ice clink in your glass?
I've got some nice Buffalo Trace in my glass. I'll be honest, I've had a long, horrible day. I've just been you have those days where you're just kind of like an idiot out wandering around and you
Oh,
just
I work in public education. I have those more often than not, I bet. So.
In fact, when I left the office, I went up to Indy this morning, and instead of the normal 2 hours because of the weather, it was 3 hours.
Oh,
Yeah,
yuck.
and that was at 5:30 in the morning after getting home at midnight from the pre-release. So that was a nice trip today. When I left at 3 o'clock, I wanted to leave a little bit earlier because it's actually snowing again here, and apparently Kentucky can't handle, an inch of snow. But they when I was coming home, I left about 3 o'clock, and the guys actually asked me. They go, "What's in your cup?" I'm like, "Why?" They're like, "You have just been out of it all day." I said, "I warned you. I was a harebrained idiot today, so that's my excuse." And I'm having a nice bourbon to make up for it. And
Nice.
I'll be honest, with it snowing all night, it may be a snow day tomorrow for me. I haven't decided quite yet. Did you
That's good. That's good.
guys get a lot of snow up there?
Yeah, we got another. Well, what happened was, so we got that big storm right around, Christmas into New Year's, and then it got up to like 50 a couple of days, and so it all melted, and then the temperature just plummeted back down, and we got a couple, 2, maybe 3 inches again overnight. And it's just been blowing around, but wind chills are still really, really bad. It's going to be like negative 20 tomorrow morning.
Oh,
So
so you may not have school tomorrow. Did they cancel it already?
it's no, they didn't cancel it. I got a note already saying we're monitoring it. We're not expecting to cancel, but we may have to. Just kind of, go to bed tonight, expecting to go to school, and if it's bad in the morning, they'll probably whistle us a snow day. So anyway, I'm fine going in tomorrow. I got a ton of stuff done today since obviously we were off for Martin Luther King. So the girls and I actually went swimming for a little while on an indoor pool, of course,
Oh, not
which
an
is
outdoor
great.
pool.
Yeah, I know. The 5-year-old was kind of like, why aren't we going to the outdoor pool? I'm like, see all that water over there that's kind of frozen? Don't want to do
Well,
that.
I take it
So.
it wasn't bad enough weather for you not to make it out to the pre-release on Friday
Oh, nothing could have
night.
kept me away. I would have been like the United States Postal Service, no rain nor sleet nor dark of night shall keep me from my appointed rounds. No, it was great. I actually headed down there a little early, hoping to get into some Commander, which we did, and so that was a lot of fun. I've got to totally do some work on my Commander deck, just because I haven't played that much. But golly gee, it was not coming together. But I was facing a couple big powerhouses. Somebody cast Mind's Desire in our game, and I was just like, wow, this is pretty brutal. But yeah, it was pretty fun though for a while. And then yeah, we got into pre-release. So I'm glad you made it out as well. You couldn't make the midnight, correct?
Yeah, they actually they set a new record for, I think our local shop's been in business 7 years, and he set a new record on midnight Friday night, and that was zero players because he canceled F&M and the pre-release at midnight, which I have to give him credit because it was not the best weather, but it was one of those like ice with snow on top and then had some ice on top of it. And he definitely put his players over profits. And I had to give him a lot of credit there.
No, that's the thing. It's as much as we love this game and as much as we want to play, there's definitely no reason, especially at about midnight and people's brains are just not working the same way they normally would at a reasonable time of the day. So, but you got out for a pre-release and a two-headed giant. Is that correct?
I did. I played Saturday at the normal pre-release. They do a midnight and then they do a 4 p.m. on Saturday. I played in the 4 p.m. Saturday. Since he canceled the Friday night one, he actually had two additional ones. So he opened up the shop early on Saturday and Sunday and just had a three-round win a match, win a pack, and it was $20 for those. I wasn't able to make it out to those because, honestly, I didn't feel like getting up and moving around in the morning cold weather. But I was able to play Saturday and Sunday. But let's talk about your midnight pre-release. How did that go for you, and how exhausted were you on Saturday?
Well, this is pretty funny, and I'm going to lead with this by saying, because the wife had given me a bunch of garbage about, hey, don't be down for the count all day Saturday. We got a busy day and stuff with the girls, et cetera, et cetera. And I was the one who went to bed last on Saturday night. So I just want to get that out in the open. I was totally fine. I think part of that had to do with winning a little bit. So it was good. As you've all heard, the shop is going through some struggles lately. We are in kind of a limbo situation with who's running the shop. But Todd from Trademart up in Quad Cities came down and ran the show, and it was great. We didn't have quite as many players come out. A lot of people came from Macomb. Some people came down from the Quad Cities, I want to say, but we had most of the core Galesburg group there. I was very, very excited about this just because of the power level of the cards, and I was excited to see what cards other people were opening. So we'll get right to it. I opened a bunch of stuff, and at first it really didn't seem like I had anything that I was going to be worth doing. I was looking for like those tribal things. You know what I'm talking about, Hurley, where you're like, oh, I'm going merfolk, or I'm going pirates, or I'm going vampires, I'm going, whatever. And I just then looked at colors, and Esper kind of came to the forefront. It was mostly white, black with a splash of blue for about five or six cards, but those five or six cards were all stars all night long. So I actually, when I texted you guys, I don't know, one-ish or something in the morning, it was Esper, Vampire, Pirates was what I ended up with. But it was a total mid-range deck. The big cards that I opened, my pre-release foil was the Kumena's Awakening, which is the blue enchantment that's basically like a two-sided Howling Mine until you get the city's blessing, and then it becomes a one-sided Howling Mine. So I put that in there, and that pulled me back in one game. I know it won me the match, because without that card, I just would not have been anywhere close. It was just drawing me out of my lands and things like that, so that was good. The other card that was really, really good all night was Tetzamok, the Primal Death, that black dragon where you reveal it and tap a swamp, and you put a prey counter on a creature. And then when you cast it, or when it enters the battlefield, I should say, then destroy each creature with a prey counter on it. So I think my best ratio on that during pre-release was a 5-1. I was able to just wipe the board. And that was awesome. Bishop of Binding was my white all-star. That card was doing such good things and sealed up a couple of games for me. So overall, it was great. I had like the Dusk Legion Zealot. That card is absolutely bonkers for like a 1-1.
That's the Elvish Visionary, the Black Elvish Visionary.
Yeah. Black Elvish. Oh my God, that card
bananas.
I was so happy to have it in my opening hand every time. And then Pirate's Cutlass was really good with the Fathom Fleet border. I didn't mind ever paying the 2 life to get that into play if I didn't have another pirate. And then the next turn I would attach Pirate Cutlass or cast Pirate's Cutlass and immediately attach it. And then I'm attacking with a 5-4. That seems pretty good and limited. And then following it up with things, Deadeye Recaller, Crafty Cut Purse. I had a Deadeye Brawler, which the Death Touch on that was absolutely stellar.
Oh, yes. Death Touch is key in this.
It really is. The Legion Conquistador was really good just to kind of outvalue here and there. And then the other one that I really wish I would have had a second one was the one with the wind. And this was out of my Ixalan pack. The enchanted creature gets 2/2 and has flying. Holy moly. That did such work for me all night. And I've got to say, Anointed Deacon, the beginning of combat, you can have target vampire get 2-0 until end of turn. When you've got a vampire that's sleeved up with the one with the wind, and then it's looking down at another 2 points of damage, that was really good. So I ended up 3-1, 7-4 in games. Just lost the final round. Really, really close game three to a good friend of mine who went 4-0. So he got the 8 packs. I got the 4. Didn't really pull anything. But I saw a lot of really interesting decks that I hope kind of stick around as we move into this new standard format. I was able to play round one was kind of like a ramp deck, but I didn't get to see any creatures because I had the guy dead so fast. Round two, I played against Renee, who had a fantastic blue-green merfolk deck that just kept bouncing my creatures. It was so maddening. And she had the Hadana's Climb enchantment. And, man, when she flipped that thing, I thought I was just absolutely dead every time she cast that, because it was just absolutely bonkers. That
That's
card's going to be
green
really, really
one,
good.
Right?
The blue-green one that transforms into the Wing Temple of Azcanta, where you tap, what is it, three, like a blue, a green, one, and it, and it gives it XX and flying, where it's kind of like a pummeler effect.
Yep.
So, which is really cool. So she swung in for some big damage with that card for sure. But a really, really good deck there. I played a really low to the ground green white deck that I was able to, I just got run over game one, but I was able to outvalue them game two and three. And then the last game, Dave and I had been talking all night, and we got paired in the fourth and final round. And I knew that he had a very similar deck. He was just playing plain or straight white black, and just was able to keep drawing into creatures and drawing into removal. So I just could not draw that double black in the final game that I needed. I had a Vraska's Contempt in my hand, but as I told him later, I didn't think it was going to matter anyway. He was just drawn too well. So overall, I was really happy with what I built. I was really really happy with the way I played, happy with the way the night went. It was a lot of fun. Didn't open a whole lot of bombs. And if there's one thing that I want to, I don't know, gripe about, I was hoping to see more really, really good cards from the set. And that's the one thing I didn't get to see. I saw a lot of like limited bombs, but I didn't get to see anybody play like, you know, any of the big planeswalkers. I didn't get to see anybody play some of the flip cards that I was really hoping to see, other than the Hadana's Climb. They just weren't there. And I was like, dang it, what? This seems like I felt primed to see something new and some of the ones that I wanted to see. So other than that, it was a really good night. And of course, then I got bought breakfast afterward by Dave. So he beats me in the final round, but then takes me out for breakfast afterward. You can't say it was a bad night.
So
at
you
all.
You took the Magic Walk of Shame, then, is what you're saying. hey, before I send you home, because you're you know, you made bad decisions last night, I'm gonna buy you breakfast first.
Something like that. It kind of seemed like because you made only slightly bad decisions, I'm gonna buy you breakfast. So I was pretty happy with that. But no, we all went out and had breakfast, and I opened some prize packs at the Steak and Shake table, which is always dicey because mustard and ketchup and syrup and everything else going on the table. But yeah, that was kind of fun. So I would easily do a sealed with this set again. I'm really looking forward to drafting this set. I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the drafts are going to be a lot of fun. I'm actually, depending on how my workload goes this week, I'm going to try to draft it this week on Magic Online because it's currently active on Magic Online.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I don't think I'm going to be able to. It's just the work schedule is just packed this week. But yeah, I mean, it looks like it's going to be a ton of fun. Sure. So my pre-release, obviously, the Midnight one was canceled. I probably wasn't going to go to it anyways. It just wipes me out on Saturday when I try to do that. And so I showed up at 4 o'clock. We went through the normal, opened my pack, and my pre-release foil was the Tindershoot Dryad. That's the 2/2 that makes 1/1 Saprolines each upkeep. And then if you have a Send, all your Saprolines get +2/+2.
That's awesome.
Opened up all my packs, and I looked at my deck. I built the deck basically built itself, and I looked at my deck, and I'm like, I need to cut some removal. You know, you're having an embarrassment of riches when you need to cut removal, because I opened up four out of four packs of Ixalan, or of Rivals of Ixalan, Moment of Cravings, which are the instant speed -2/-2, gain 2 life.
Oh yeah, I had one of those, and I thought I was living the dream. Four? Oh,
four.
That's silly.
I cut one because I'm like, that's just too much.
Wow.
And then two Impales, which is just the 4-drop kill a creature.
Yep, had one of those. That's a great card.
And two Reaver Ambushes, which was exile target creature with power 3 or less.
Oh my god, that's great.
And then a Golden Demise, which is the -2/-2 to all creatures for 3, but if you have Ascend, it's only your opponent's creatures.
Yeah, that one-sided
portion of
that card is absolutely bonkers.
That was a sideboard card for me because of my deck. So I have my Troubleshoot Dryad, or my Tindershoot Dryad. I also opened up a Jadelight Ranger, which was just a freaking all-star. That's the 3-drop that double explores. It's a 2/1. Had a Golden Guardian, which is the 4/4 defender that you pay to fight something, and then you can flip it when it dies. And a Gulta
Primarch. Yeah, that card's basically Pack Rat, right?
Essentially, yes. And then a Gulta.
That card's just silly.
And a Gulta Primal Hunger. The 12/12 is a 12/12 trample, and it costs X less for the total power of creatures you control.
Good lord.
Yeah, it was embarrassing how good this deck was.
Wow.
So, just to be cute with it, too, and I did this multiple times, I also put in, I splashed white, so I'm going, obviously going green-black. I splashed white, and I put in a Bellowing Aegisar, which is the 6-drop dinosaur that's a 3/5. Whenever it deals damage, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. Many, many times, I had the Golden Guardian fight that just to pump my team. Many times.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And then a couple times I would fight it twice to pump my team. I ended up with two Swift Wardens, which is the Flash Merfolk that gives Merfolk Hexproof for 3/3. A Forerunner of the Heralds, Tishana's Wayfinders, and two Dusk Legion Zealots. So my deck was good. Let's put it that way. My deck was very good.
Yeah, right.
I played 4 rounds and I didn't drop a game all 4 rounds. I did have a couple of the 2-drops to the Direfleet Hoarders, and then I had a Pounce I had played in there as well. And I had some other little odds and ends in there. I had a couple 1-drops, like the 1/2 Vampire. Whenever you attack with a Vampire, each opponent loses a life. Just stuff like that as filler. But so I didn't drop a single game for the first 4. Playing at table 1, round 5. And I have a Gulta. He had put the 3-drop Merfolk out that makes your lands. You can play like XX, and it makes your lands into lands after they put +1/+1 counters on them.
Oh, sure.
I had instantly killed that, but he had a 3/3 out. And then he had like a 2/2 and a 2/2 and like a 4/4 or something like that, or 4/5. And I had my 12/12 Gulta out, and I had, like, the Golden Guardian was just pumping crap out, and it was pretty good. Another all-star for me was Mausoleum Harpy, which is the 5-drop 3/3 that if you have Ascend, and it's a flyer. If you have Ascend, every time a creature you control dies, it gets a +1/+1 counter.
And oh,
then,
yeah.
Yeah, and then I had Ruthless Knave as well. I was battering the hell out of that because I would Ruthless Knave to sacrifice some creatures and just grow my harpy. So I looked at the board. He had five mana open, including 3 white. And really the only thing I could profitably attack with was the Gulta, the 12/12 trample. So I'm like, you know, I'm not going to attack because I don't want it to destroy target attacking creature. I want to wait until the rest of my team doesn't have, I have a couple more Sapperlings from my Dryad, and the rest of the team doesn't have Summoning Sickness. So, like, the following turn, I was going to have 2 more Sapperlings to attack with. There were 3/3s. So, I didn't attack in, and a couple people were watching me behind. I didn't attack in, and he Windmill Slams, top decks. He's out of cards, top decks, and he windmill slams the 4/8 dinosaur that's indestructible flying.
Oh, yeah, the white one? God.
So I started to race him, and I was 3 life off of racing him. So I lost my match there. We had 2 really good games at the beginning, and then I lost the 3rd game there to the white
guy.
I know. Well, it happens.
That's what happens when you don't attack. I mean, jeez.
I know, and the only reason why was I wanted to force him to eat up his mana, and then I would be able to eat all of his creatures and then just continue to pump. I didn't want to just attack in, have him use a combat trick, and then play a huge creature next turn, essentially.
Sure. No, and, I get it. So, like, you make these decisions in Limited that you would never make in Constructed, and that's part of the beauty of Limited, I think, is that you actually have to make those calls, even if you think you're just so favored. And then, of course, hey, here comes a Zatalpa, Primal Dawn, right off the top.
Oh,
boom.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So I
lost that one. So I was 4-1. This was 7 rounds, mind you.
That's a lot of rounds.
I know. Or no, I'm sorry, 8 rounds.
Oh, my God.
We had 110, so whatever that is. Maybe it was 7. No, it was 8 rounds.
That's ridiculous.
So I lost that round, won my next round, lost my next one, and we're in the final one. So 2 of my friends that are playing, that they've been at the top tables all day, in one round, I think it was round 6, table 0, which was the camera table, so it was technically table 1, they both drew, and table 1 drew. So by the time we got to the last round, nobody could draw. There was only 1 undefeated, and nobody could draw to guarantee to get into the top 8.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
The way it worked out, I was at table 8. So I was in 15th place. And if I win, I take 8th place. If I lose, he's only paying out top 16. I take, you know, outside top 16 probably. So first game, first time this happened all day where I kept a 2 lander. I drew a couple cards, then saw 1 more land, played that land, and then started to play my 3 drops that were exploring. Saw 14 more cards, including putting all this crap into my graveyard from Explorer. So saw 14 more cards and didn't see another land. And he was playing 5 color good stuff, and he just hit his land naturally all day, like just all, the entire time.
It doesn't like, that seem to always happen?
Happens. Oh my gosh. So then game 2, we go to game 2, and you know, by turn 6, he has the red white dino, a red green dino that attacks and does 1 damage to like each opponent, a hostage taker, and something else. And he had all 5 colors out again, and I'm just like, all right,
that's gross.
Yeah, and I'm just like, he's like, well, that's the first time today that my mana's worked out. I was like, are you kidding me? So all that work, I ended up taking 21st.
Hey, out of 100 and whatever, that's good.
Yeah, it was like,
it seems like with that deck, I'm sure you feel like with that deck, you should have gotten a little higher. But no, that's awesome. Yeah, it was a ton of fun, though. Wouldn't you agree? I thought the play style was really good. I thought the cards, the interactivity of the cards, there was a lot of play to the set so far, especially with the Ixalan cards kind of supporting it. So I'm excited about where it's going to go from here.
I am too. I my big complaint, and well, I'll go to my two-head giant in a second here, but my big complaint is really that keyword soup dinosaur, the Zabalto or whatever it's called, the white one, I think that's just ridiculous. The removal is really good in this set. So having so many bombs at rare is not the problem I thought it was going to be, because I mean there's just a ton of removal in this set, a lot of good common removal. I mean obviously you've got Chupacabra and all that crap too, but
the fact that it's indestructible though,
kills it. I'm just like, okay, you're either playing white or you're dead,
right? Because you can the exile effect, kind of like off of Bishop of Binding or something, could take care of the Zatalpa. It's just...
Or the pacifism, I mean, or something, but yeah,
correct,
it's not...
Correct. Luminous Bonds, card, the new pacifism. It seems like there's ways to take care of it, but yeah, if you have no answer for it, if you just have destroy stuff in your hand, boy, that's going to be a rough one to deal with for sure.
Absolutely. So, I mean, they could have even said on there, when this takes... we were discussing this in the car. When this takes combat damage, destroy it. Because it's a 4/8, so you're going to have to block it and sacrifice your 5/5 to it.
Right.
Or your X5 to it. But it's going to have to take combat damage, so it's still going to attack very profitably with the double strike. But it's just that's just my biggest complaint about that, is it's just keyword soup. A lot of the mythics are actually not very good. I noticed that. I was just like, a lot of the mythics. Now, you know, a couple people, they had the big artifacts, the big EDH artifacts, and in sealed, those are fine. But there was so much synergy in the set that I have a feeling drafts just going to be hyper aggressive.
And I think I'm with you there. I don't know if I think that there's too much though in some of those, or not enough in some of those mythics. I think some of those mythics are costed exactly where they should be. I just, back to what I was worried about, I just didn't see them. I was hoping to see how some of those mythics would play, you know, in a match and stuff, and I just didn't see them. So that's my biggest thing. So I'm curious to see how your two-headed giant went, though. Were you happy with how things went?
Oh, I will definitely get to that. I want to touch on those mythics. So cards like Alinda the Dusk, I saw, since we had so many people, and I literally won all my games within like 14 minutes.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I mean, the Alinda, that's the 4-drop vampire. I'll talk more about her later. That is just a house. The Trapjaw Tyrant was really good. The Rekindling Phoenix is much better than I expected it to be.
Oh, that thing is just nuts. Yeah,
that thing's just nuts. But yeah, I agree with you. They're costed where they should be. And I like that they didn't put, it seems like in this set, they didn't put the standard all-stars at mythic, not like a lot of them. It seems like they put like these cool, like obviously the planeswalkers, but then they put these like cool big, maybe like build-arounds or something like that at mythic. And I think that's what you want.
Sure.
That's where mythic was supposed to be the entire time. And you know, like who's I don't see Polyraptor becoming a standard all-star, or you know, being played in modern, you know, and like the ones that are being played outside of a couple, you know, most of them are going to be like ones or twos of.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah,
correct.
So mm-hmm. So I agree with you a little bit on the on like some of the mythic stuff as well. And it looks like a good set to draft, and I could be totally wrong, but it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun to draft. So our two-headed giant, this was a doozy. I played with my friend Ben, who's one of the better limited players. You can hear me opening my deck box there. I played with my friend Ben, who's one of the better limited players, and he's like, I'm playing with you, and we're just going to I'm just taking Black White Vampires, you can have the remaining. And I'm like, all right,
that's awesome.
Whatever, I don't care. So he played 4 pre-releases this weekend, including the 2 bonus ones, and he opened 3 Profane Processions.
Holy God.
Yeah, like that
how
card.
How do people do that?
That card is just, he's Mr. Profane Procession. That card is just stupid good.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
In that format, it's too slow. I think it's too slow for any standard or anything like that, but no, so he built a black, just this broken black-white Vampires deck. He had Tetsamok, Primal Death,
mm-hmm.
Which did some serious work. He had the Profane Procession that I already mentioned. He opened that in our two-head giants. He had the 2-drop rare Vampire that you put counters on it, and then when it dies, you gain life equal to that. I mean, every card in his thing was Vampires. He had a Bishop of Binding. It was an embarrassment of riches. And so then we're trying to build mine, and I'm like, I don't know, you know, I don't know where I want to be at. And we kind of looked, and he's like, there's a broken blue green merfolk deck here. I'm like, what? And he's like, I'm like, there's no like rares or anything here. And he goes, no, there's just a ton of synergy. And so we laid it out. I opened the 2-drop Lord,
mm-hmm.
2 Silver Gill Adepts, which is good, obviously. 3 Deep Root Warriors, which is the 2/2 for 2 that when it's blocky, it's +1/+1. 2 Jungleborn Pioneers, which is the 2/2 Merfolk that makes a 1/1 token when it's played. 3 Crashing Tides, which is just an amazing card. That's the 3-drop sorcery that return target creature's owner's hand, draw a card, but you can play as if it had flash if you control a Merfolk.
Right.
2 Unclaimed Territories, because I was obviously running blue-green. 2 Vine Shaper Mystics. Kapala, Warden of Waves.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I had an air elemental in there, a River's Rebuke, and a Jade, the Jade guy again too.
Wow. That, so, yeah, that's, you didn't see that? Was he was the one who was like,
well,
pointing that
we
out
were,
to you?
I was looking at my side of things, and he was looking at his. And then we finally, when we put them together, because I hadn't seen his pile really, when we put them together, I'm like, oh, I see it now.
Yeah, right. Wow.
Yeah,
that's
so
incredible.
This one, we this was a six rounder, started at 4 o'clock, so we didn't get done till like after midnight because they always go long. And we went five without dropping. I don't think we went over 12 minutes after winning, and we went 5-0, and then going into round, or I'm sorry, 4-0 going into round five. If you're playing Two-Headed Giant, which usually you only play a pre-release weekend, the black card that's black one, and each opponent discards a card, or discards two cards, and then if you control a vampire, each opponent loses two life and you gain two life. That is one of the most broken cards in Two-Headed Giant. <It's> Arterial Flow
like
is
it.
What it's called, because it's each of your opponents discard two, so they discard four, and they lose four life, and you gain two life. We use that to great effect many times. We cast the same Ravenous Chupacabra, I don't know, three times, I think, off of Profane Procession.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was just broken. A lot of times, I would just curve out. I'd play the one-drop Merfolk into Merfolk Lord into Kapala, and then they're like, well, I can't kill any of your stuff, into, like, the Vine Shaper Mystic that would just just buff stuff up. I mean, it was – I had two River Herald's Boons, which was the put a +1/+1 counter on target creature and one on target Merfolk. I mean, it was great. So we get to round five. And we're playing, and I'm just getting mana flooded, and the entire board is marked by Tetzalok, or whatever his name is.
Sure.
The Prey Dinosaur. There's like nine creatures on their side of the board, and I'm like basically playing like just two and three drops, trying to just hold the flow while he's waiting for a six mana. He saw like 13 cards, didn't see his other manas, any of his other mana, and if he would have had one more mana, he would have been able to play Tetzamok and wipe the board. So we just lost on that one. It was just – that one was just a straight variance. So, again, breakers were all screwed up. We're in third place, and nobody can draw. There's no top eight here, but nobody can draw. And I'm like, all right, great. So if we win – I'm sorry, we were in fourth place, I believe. And I'm like, if we win, we probably take second. And – it went out to, we won, so we went 5-1, and it went out to third place breakers, and we got beat from first to second was one percentage point, opponent match win percentage point, and between us and the second place players, it was, and we took third, it was 0.2% on the third place breakers.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's awful.
So we first place got two boxes, so a box each. Second place got a box, and then we got like nine packs apiece. And I'm just
wow.
Like, all that for this? For real?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That's
so
crazy.
It was a ton of fun. I mean, the power of just the vampires really, really impressed me. I mean, I got to say his was a good vampire deck, but the power of vampires, they have – it's weird because they go wide, but they also have so much resiliency. I mean, the opponent we lost to, they also had Tetzamok, and it was a weird Tetzamok because it says all your opponents destroy each creature your opponents control. And so we would bounce our Tetzamok and play it again, and it was all this nonsense. And they just had so much synergy, and they had so much, just go-to time.
Sure, sure.
And then when stuff would die, it would just, like, repopulate the board. So it was a ton of fun, though. And it was a super late night, and then I got up super early. And, oh, I forgot to tell you also earlier, our hot water heater broke this morning, so I got to take an ice-cold shower.
Oh, my God.
And I actually turned on the oven and opened the door so I could warm up before I went out in the 3-degree weather that was here.
Oh my God. You heated yourself with your oven.
I did, in fact, because I'm just like, I was like, oh my gosh, it's so cold, because I woke up a little later and I thought.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That is the epitome of a Byhards episode right there.
That is.
Oh my goodness. Well, Hurley, I'm glad you were talking about the strength of the vampires, and I'm glad that we talked about the kind of the strength of the merfolk too, because it seems like with this new banned and restricted list that has just been announced today, we're going to have to start brewing with some different things. So what'd you make of the banned and restricted list? Let's recap it for our listeners. If we would, in standard, four whole cards got banned today. We have Attune with Aether. We have
Rogue Refiner.
We have Ramunap Ruins, and then Rampaging Ferocidon.
So I think they hit it out of the park here. This is going to weaken up energy enough that it's still going to be a deck, but it's not going to be nearly as good, and you're not going to have these four color variants.
See, here's the thing. When Ian Dukes, if you read Ian Dukes' article, and I would encourage everybody to read it, he's the one who wrote the BNR announcement today on the mothership. That's one of the things that kind of catches me sideways. It's the attempt, the banning of the cards is not to kill the decks, it's to weaken the decks. It's to let the other win percentages rise. And there's something a little silly about that to me. It sounds a little artificial, like we're banning cards just so these are still going to be decks. They're just not going to be as good of decks. And, you know, maybe this is just me kind of catching the boat a little late, but with every ban and restricted announcement, part of me thinks that you should only ban something if it's completely broken, if they miss something, a la the Saheeli, Felidar, Guardian combo, things like that. That seems to be where you ban something. This is like, well, we're going to weaken it, but we're still expecting it to be a top-tier deck. And that kind of had my face wrinkled up a little bit. I don't know about you. I don't know if they hit it out of the park, but the reason, or I probably agree with you that they hit it out of the park in the decision. The reasoning kind of made me, you know, grab my chin, and things that make you go, hmm. So I don't tend to think that they want to keep that going forward as, you know, the rationale. But for this case, I think they had to do something, because they were probably going to start losing players in droves if energy was going to remain a thing.
I agree with that. But I think their rationale is actually good on this, and I'll talk about that here in a second. These all, to me, scream that play design had a huge hand in banning these cards. And the big one that sticks out to me that people are scratching their head on, and I don't understand why they're scratching their head on it, is Rampaging Ferocidon.
Yeah.
That card would have limited a lot of decks, a lot of the creature decks that they obviously wanted to push in Rivals. So that card had to go. The rest of these, I think they said, instead of just taking the axe like they have in the past, use a scalpel versus using a sledgehammer to just knock the deck off. And I think that moving forward, I don't think this is going to be a regular thing, because if I remember reading correctly, Dominaria will be the first actual block that will be helped with designed by play design, or that will be finished by play design. And I
correct,
think, yes.
Correct, yes.
And I think that that's going to make a huge thing, or a huge difference. So we're not going to have these all the time. But I like their new attitude of laying out all the information, looking at the stats, saying, here's why we did it, here's why we didn't do these other cards, and we want these to be decks, but we don't want these to be 60% win, you know, 50-plus win percentages.
Correct.
So I like the rationale, and I think it's just something new that Magic players aren't used to.
Yeah, that's probably true. And like I said, I think overall I agree with the decision. I was surprised and yet kind of happy that they chose to do Rogue Refiner and Attune with Aether, because I don't think one of those, just cutting one of those, it wouldn't have weakened it enough. So I'm thinking of my pet project, the green-blue pummeler that I really, really like. Is that deck dead after, and I'm thinking about this, I'm like, maybe I'd have to just go more blue to try to get some more energy from other sources. But yeah, I don't think energy is necessarily dead. I think it definitely, as I told somebody earlier, chops out the leg from under them. It's one of those kind of things. It's not going to be nearly as efficient, but I still think it's got a place in the metagame. It'll be interesting to see what fills the void of that hyper-efficient deck, if there is one, because right now, Hurley, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like Merfolk has a place on the map in Standard. This is not just something that's relegated to Modern or Legacy. It seems like Merfolk is going to have a spot in Standard moving forward.
So, I actually disagree with you, and I am completely ripping this opinion off of Jerry Thompson. So, if he's listening, thank you for producing your podcast. On my nice long snowy drive this morning, I got to listen to, usually I listen to two podcasts, like a news podcast and then a magic podcast. And I got to listen to three this morning. Jerry was talking about the Rivals decks, and they were talking in the sense of, on his game podcast, they were talking in the sense of, okay, in a vacuum, so ignore that energy so powerful. What are these decks doing? His problem with the Merfolk deck is that it doesn't do anything. It doesn't have creature interaction. It just has blue-green Merfolk, like just Merfolk. You can't give your stuff easily. You can't give your stuff unblockable or island walk, so you're just attacking him for 20 or 30, you know, turn four. He just said, you know, in that color combination, there's just no, outside of some expensive bounce spell, there's no interaction. There's no... you know, I'm looking at fatal pushes. There's nothing like that. So it's essentially just ignoring your opponent, and your opponent is not going to be ignoring you. So he's worried. I do think it has a place. I think that people will get there with it, but he's worried, okay, what is the deck actually doing outside of just throwing a bunch of creatures on the board?
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be – it's definitely going to hinge upon a couple of key cards, and I think – first of all, you're definitely going to have a Lord or two out. That's going to be absolutely key. And I definitely think that if you don't have a Kumena, Tyrant of Orozca out, you're kind of sunk, I'm guessing. When that thing is just, it's almost like a Planeswalker. It's got three different kind of quote-unquote modes that it can engage in. Tap three and tap Merfolk, draw a card, tap five, put a 1/1 counter on each Merfolk you control. You could just outvalue your opponent. The fact that Merfolk Mistbinder is only a 2/2 and it's a Lord that gives all other Merfolk you get 1/1. I mean, it doesn't give itself 1/1, but so what? At the same time, I think it's going to have a place. And, you know, we've seen a lot of humans decks in Modern. We've seen a lot of creature strategies from Standard in Modern and Legacy, just kind of dumping creatures on the battlefield a la Collected Company, etc. That can sometimes be enough. So I'd probably have to disagree with Jerry's take on this. I'd like to see some early Merfolk lists and see what happens, but it's also going to depend on what other decks are out there.
Yeah, it absolutely will. I mean, in this, in my mind, and you're playing in a Standard environment, you play out, you know, you play out your Kumani. You're like, yeah, I've got all these powerful Merfolk, and then they're just like, okay, Wrath, you know, that type of thing.
Sure.
So that's it's definitely, it's going to be interesting. I do agree there's a deck there, but I think the way that everyone wants to build the deck is not where the deck is going to end up, and it's not going to be the good one.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. It'll be, you know, the strength of Legacy and Modern Merfolk is obviously the cards like Spreading Seas, where
island
you get
walk.
The island walk.
Yep.
And all your creatures can just kind of walk on over unimpeded to do ridiculous points of damage with all the lords that are out. Without a card like that, that's crazy. And I think that's where you're going to have to do like the winged temple of Orozca and take to the air, pump some creatures, you know, maybe not swing with the entire team, but just give something hexproof and, you know, send it into the air and see if it's going to get the job done. So I'm excited to see what people are going to do with this, because I know that there's people out there brewing as we speak with Merfolk, just like they are with vampires, just like they are probably with dinos and pirates since the Bandon Restricted announcement came down. So having said that, What do you think are some of the decks that are going to rise to the top? If you think Merfolk does not have a place ultimately, what do you think are some of the decks that are going to make it into that tier one?
So Azor the Lawbringer is a card that a lot of people look at it and they think of Sphinx's Revelation. And after thinking about it, reading about it, listening about it, I think this Azor the Lawbringer spawns a blue, white, green color combination? Naya?
No, blue, white, green would be, I'm thinking of Azorius, but that's just blue, white. Blue, white, green. Oh, goodness gracious. With red, it's Naya.
Okay, blue, well, regardless, white, I'll take green. It back in 3, 2, 1. So I think that there's some interesting cards in here, and one of the cards that I was reading about, listening about today was Azor the Lawbringer. Everyone looks at this and thinks Sphinx's Revelation, but I kind of have a mind of maybe this goes into a blue-white-green like mid-range deck where you're attacking in with some weird cards. I mean, this isn't a really control card. It's slow, but Maybe that spawns like I said, a blue, white, green mid-range deck. I like that a lot. I think there's definitely a green, white tokens deck, and I will talk about that a little bit later. I do think there'll be the Ramunap Red with the Ramunap Ruins and Rampaging Ferrostron going away. I think that's going to go over more towards the kind of Boros colors. And I mean, you have the mana for it, and I think Path of Metal is super powerful, and that's going to be just a pain in the butt card for everybody, because that's going to be like, oh yeah, I'll just do one or two damage to you every turn, and they're like, okay, and they're like, you like attack in and like destroy one of your creatures, and so, and it's going to be super easy. I mean, all your stuff's going to have first strike or vigilance or haste you play in that deck anyways, so I think that gives the deck a long game. I also think there's going to be like a black-red control deck. I'm not sure there's going to be an Esper control deck or like a blue-white control deck. I think it's going to be more like a black-red control deck. And I also think that there's going to be kind of a black, like a black-green reanimator style deck, if that makes sense, using some of the big fat dinos. I just see something there. The one I'm definitely most excited about, though, is black-white vampires.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Black-White Vampire seems to have a big play in the metagame.
Yeah, and I think these enchantments, Profane Procession, everyone looks at it and thinks, oh, this is awesome. I think it's just too slow. I mean, it's a 3. If you look at it, it's a 3 mana do nothing, that you have to spend 15 mana to really flip. Yeah, that's spread out over turns, but, is that what you want to be doing? I don't think it is. But there's some of these enchantments, like people are going to play around with them and people are going to look. I think obviously Chupacabra is going to be a pain in the royal butts, and I'm not looking forward to facing down, 3 Chupacabras in whatever deck I'm playing, unless it's a, creatureless control deck. But yeah, definitely the black-white vampires. And before the show, we kind of discussed this a little bit, but I wanted to kind of see what you're excited about building. And I know what I'm excited about building, but what are you really looking forward to, like kind of playing around with and expanding out for the first couple weekends of Standard, if you could make it down to FNM?
Okay, so if I'm looking to maybe put something together at FNM in the first week or two, I've got to say that it's going to have to be a black-white vampires, or what you said, a black-white vampires or a blue-green merfolk deck, but I just don't think I can get all the cards together for it there, in that span of time. That just doesn't seem reasonable. The cards I'm really, really excited to build around, the first one I would say is Twilight Prophet, the black vampire cleric. I feel like that card is going to have a heyday at some point in its Magic career. It just seems like it's way too powerful. Anytime that, you're flipping cards off the top of your library, gaining that much life, and your opponent is losing that much life, I think that's just money right there. So I'm really excited about that. The other one that I was excited to play against and I didn't see this weekend was the Dire Fleet Daredevil. And I realize I'm not answering your question, Hurley. I mean, I'm talking cards, not deck archetypes, yeah. But I'm gonna come around and get there. The Dire Fleet Daredevil, the 2/1 first striker that kind of functions as the Snapcaster Mage for your opponent's graveyard, I think is actually a really, really interesting card. And I'm wondering if there's enough speed in red, even after Ramunap Ruins and things, because Hazoret's still a thing. All of the, you know, the Oncross Crasher are still a thing. If that's got a space in the deck, and if a 2/1 first striker for two, a red and one, seems to be a really good fit, I think that red deck is going to stick around. So probably if I had to choose between the two, I would love to maybe go almost a black-blue mid-range based on what I saw this weekend. And then second, I would like to maybe go a mono-red aggro, just because I know in the early parts of any kind of new standard set, there's always room for an aggro deck to kind of just jump up and bite people in the ass. So my playstyle obviously would tend toward the black blue control style, and I tell you what, with like the Dusk Legion Zealot, with the Ravenous Chupacabra, that card is just absolutely bonkers. I was thinking, man, I feel vindicated. We had Necrotal on 3 minutes to Brew not too long ago, right? Four or 5 weeks. I'm thinking this is a better Necrotal.
Oh,
you
it
know?
Is 100%.
It's totally a better Necrotal with a 2-butt instead of a 1-butt. It doesn't have first strike, but who cares? Destroy target creature. When that first came down on the battlefield, I'm looking and somebody took out my Tetsamok, and I was like, "Are you kidding me? That? Wow, that's pretty awesome." So the fact that the rares are already like, I don't know, $15 is pretty telling on that one. So yeah, I'm excited about the black blue control. I'm excited about the mono red aggro just to see what would happen. I still have this fantasy in the back of my mind that the blue green pummeler deck that I was on for a hot minute it still has some life left even after the bannings. And if there's a way to kind of just replace some of the Attune and the Rogue Refiner slots with something else, I think that's something where I'd start, just because I already have a base there and I can just kind of slot some new cards in. And if it doesn't end up working, so be it.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned the Chupacabra. We had talked about it last week, I believe. Did we talk about Patrick Chapin and discussing Chupacabra?
I don't know if we actually did, but I know that he has some pretty strong feelings about that card.
You just need to go and watch it. If you haven't seen it, it's a video segment, and he talks about how this drives the format towards all either enter the battlefield or some kind of value decks. And I agree with him. I don't think it's going to be a 4-of in every deck, but it's going to be in a lot of decks, and you need to have some payoff with your cards. That if they just play a 4-drop Chupacabra, you have to have something. So I'm kind of glad you mentioned that, though, because you should definitely go out and find that article or find that video clip. And he talks about how it's just a huge design mistake. The deck I am really looking forward to is, if you couldn't tell, Black-White Vampires. I like your mono-red idea. The Dire Fleet Daredevil, I actually think is going to be really good in Modern. And the reason is not because you can cast your opponent's cards, but because you can cut off your opponent's cheap cards from their graveyard.
Correct.
So they can't snapcaster them back or delve them. And so I think just being able to exile that on a 2-drop is super powerful. But Black-White Vampires, the card I am so excited about, and to be perfectly upfront, today, after looking at the price, looking at the card, and fully reading what it does, I bought more than 10, but less than 100. So you can guess where I'm at in that range. it's obviously more towards 100. Of Alinda, the Dusk Grows.
Oh yeah, the legendary one.
Yeah, that's.
Well, heck, you'll have plenty of commanders to brew around if she just goes bust anyway. So there you
go. Oh my gosh, this card. If you don't know what this is a 2-colorless, a white and a black for a 1/1 lifelink. Legendary creature, vampire knight. You're like, oh, what is this garbage? So whenever another creature dies, put a +1/+1 counter on it. When Alinda dies, create X 1/1 white lifelink vampire creatures, where X is Alinda's power. So you go, like, your one drops. I mean, they could be Legion's Landing or the 2-1, the Sky Marcher Aspirant, which is the 2-1 Ascend that gets flying if you have City's Blessing, which in this deck you'll get City's Blessing without a problem. You play, you know, like one of those, then you play your 2-drop into, you know, like Paladin of Atonement or the 2-drop that makes a 1-1 Vampire when it dies. Again, you know, we're talking about payoff cards here, so all those cards have a good payoff if they die. And then your 3-drop, you go into the Vampire that was in Ixalan, or I'm sorry, the Vampire that was in Kaladesh block, and it was a Aetherborn Vampire.
Sure. Oh yeah, Aetherborn Vampires. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
you can play that, and because you can sacrifice creatures freely out to that, and then turn four, you're just like Alinda, and then you can sac creatures out. I even think you're going into your Twilight Prophet. You're playing your Champion of Dusk at turn five, so it's a 4/4 that draws you like four cards, three cards, something like that. You can even play Vona's Hunger if you want to. I mean, there's just so many good vampires. I think you want to splash. I'm getting higher and higher on Whatley, Radiant Champion. I think you might want to splash green in that to either run Journey to Eternity or Whatley, Radiant Champion. I mean, I in my mind, you could splash red and run Angrath too, because you can just steal it, sack their stuff out. I mean, in my mind, this vampires deck is just going to be busted beyond busted. And I am super looking forward to it as well. I think that Alinda is just key. I'm not as high on the Twilight Prophets as far as how many cards you want in. Like, you don't want a 4 of Twilight Prophet, I don't think.
Oh, no. You wouldn't want a 4 of in any deck. But I definitely think if you're able to get the City's Blessing, that card is a game ender pretty quickly.
It is. I mean, that's maybe like a 2 of. I do think you run 4 Alindas. Only because it was a legendary, worst case scenario, you hit him for one, and then you play your second one, and then it dies and it becomes an X1 or it becomes a lifelink and it pumps your new Alinda. So I think that's a good point.
I hadn't thought about that. That's
I mean, it's just like, you know, it's not the best rate, but it's not terrible. You obviously want to run Legion Lieutenant to, you know, pump your vampires, and you want to run like just that type of stuff. I was even looking at the new Anthem, because that one I've seen was doing some serious work. That's the Radiant Destiny. So, no, I think this Vampire deck's going to be really good. I'm a little more hesitant about the Merfolk deck, like I said earlier. I don't think the Dinosaur deck got anything. I could be wrong. I don't think you're going to see a Dinosaur deck. I think you could see, like, a Blue-Black Control deck or Black-Red Control deck, and if Rekindling Phoenix was also doing some serious work as well. So it depends on how many Vraska's Contempts are running around so that they don't get exiled.
Right.
I think exiling is going to be very important in this set. But, yeah, I mean, those cards, they all look good. I frankly, as far as the financial aspect of it goes, I mean, there's a lot of financial questions with this set, because it's like, what are the good cards? Nobody, especially now with the shakeup, nobody knows what the good cards are. Blood Sun's a rare. I don't think it's going to stay. I think it's, what, $10 now?
Yeah, it's about $10.
I don't think it's going to stay that, because it's just a rare and an imprint set. I think your expensive cards are going to be Twilight Prophet, Rekindling Phoenix, and Alinda, and maybe Azor, the Lawbringer, depending on if that deck ever comes around. But as far as the rares go, I mean, you're going to see... You'll see probably a lot of like $3 rares in this set, and that's probably it. I mean, you might see a couple break out like $8 or $10 rares, but I doubt it. And I mean, we pulled a promo Tetsamok, and we sold that thing right away. It was worth like $12 or something like that. It was a joke. I'm like, yeah, shut up and take this, or $10. yeah, and then we sold our Blood Suns because they were paying $6 a piece at Blood Suns. So
wow.
I'm like, yeah, buy this next week. I'll buy this next week when it's $5. And he goes, yeah, that's a good move.
Some people just want to have them that right then and there.
They absolutely do. But no, I mean, this is definitely going to shake things up. I think there's a lot of decks here. I think there's, if you can make the deck, I think there's a lot of financial opportunity there as well. So I am super excited. I've got, like I said, I've got most of my stuff for pickup on Sunday when I go to GP Indy. And I'm going to pick those. I'm going to pick those most of those Alindas up on Sunday. And the Twilight Prophets are still a little expensive for me. I mean, they're still about $8.
Yep.
I might pick up a couple just to pick up when I get up there, depending on what the price is. But yeah, I mean, this is going to be a very, very interesting set, and I'm looking forward to playing a little bit of Standard too.
Cool.
Yep.
Well,
so, I was going to say, Brian, was there anything this week that really caught your eye, or this weekend that really caught your eye outside of like the pre-releases and then obviously the big bombshell of the banned and restricted announcements?
No, not really. I really wasn't paying too much attention, obviously. Trying to wake up a little bit on Saturday after being up all night was one thing. So, no, I was really focused on just pre-release, and then Banned and Restricted came down. I was pretty happy to see that it was only Standard, obviously. I did not want to have to delve into the whole Modern and Legacy and Vintage formats and try to wrap my head around those. So the fact that Standard was able to take the brunt of that made me pretty glad this morning.
Yeah, I'm glad that they also put the note in there that said if they do ban something on the next one, it's not going to be out till after the Pro Tour, so it's not going to mess up any of the Pro Tour stuff. I mean, good for them for being transparent, so people aren't freaking out. Oh, you know what? Are my Tron lanes going to get banned? Is this going to get banned? Is that going to get banned? I'm glad they put that on there.
Yeah.
The only other thing I saw all weekend, really, obviously this was last week, but Chapin's article was a good read. One of the better reads I saw was they had a play design article on the Mothership on Friday that was takeaways from the Rivals of Ixalan pre-release. And they, Melissa DeToro was talking about playing in the pre-release for at the Loading Ready Run office. And she actually helped design this. So she talked about one of the big ones was she talked about how easy it was to get Ascension is what it's called, or Ascend.
The City's Blessing from Ascend, yeah.
That was a lot easier to get than I thought it would be. I thought it would be not super difficult, but I didn't think it was going to be as easy as it was. And then she also talks about some of the reprints that they reprinted between Rivals and Ixalan. And I got to say, I was a little skeptical at first. I'm like, this is laziness, but I'm glad they did that. Having that, the Inquisitor, the Legion, or Legion Conquistador. The one that
I love that
up.
Card. Yeah, that was great.
That card would be completely and utterly unplayable if they didn't have that in Rivals. So I think that's good. Take a look at the article. I think it's a good read because they kind of talk about some returning mechanics, and they talk about the play design aspect of it and then how it actually played out when they were playing that pre-release. So I think that those were all very, very good points that she brought up, and I look forward to more of the articles and more transparency as a whole from Wizards. But Wizards, you made some people unhappy, but you know what? These are the same people who said, fix Standard, fix Standard. Then they try to fix Standard, and now they're saying, well, why'd you ban stuff? Why'd you ban stuff? So you don't have to listen to them.
Indeed. Well, Hurley, I'm glad you got to make it out to pre-release. I was a little nervous after the ice storm on Friday in Louisville, but thankfully it cleared up enough. And to all you patrons out there and everybody listening on MTGCast, hope you had a great pre-release weekend. We'd love to hear about it via the show notes. And we will be back next week with the full trio at your disposal. And we'll get to have to listen to that guy who sounds just a little bit better than we do.
Well,
so.
And we do have a big news announcement that we have to announce before we leave the show, and we'll announce it again next week. So if you currently go to thetryhards3.com, it takes you to our Patreon page. So now we officially have a website. Now, yes, it just goes to our Patreon page, but if we ever want to fill it out with content or we want to post things, we do have that website now. So you can also email us at right now the placeholder is thetryhards3@thetryhards3.com. I know that's awful, but that's just the placeholder for right now. But yeah, if you ever want to access our Patreon where we post a lot of our news and stuff, just go to thetryhards3.com and you'll see the news. And we should have a couple of big announcements in the next week or two as well with the tryhards.
Awesome.
Yep, I'm looking forward to it. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Hopefully, we didn't talk your ear off. We'll talk to everyone next week.
Have a good one.